Welcome to the Community Oncology Journal podcast for the month of October 2011. I am Dr. David Henry. This month we bring you a review of the new lung cancer screening trial in which annual CT scan bested annual chest x-ray in a high-risk population. We have a case report of an unusual presentation of metastatic melanoma. We then follow with a series of brief reports from several meetings, including the ASCO Breast Cancer Symposium, the European Multidisciplinary Cancer Congress, and the American Society of Radiation Oncology. Finally, our Washington update reviews biosimilars at the FDA, so let's begin. Reduced lung cancer mortality with low-dose computed tomographic screening by Dr. Jamie Abram in our community translation section. The National Lung Screening Trial Research Team of the National Cancer Research Institute recently reported a large-scale trial of CT scan versus chest x-ray and the presence and risk for lung cancer. From August 2002 through April 2004, 53,454 persons at high risk for lung cancer were enrolled in 33 U.S. medical centers and randomized to receive either three annual low-dose CT scans or chest x-ray. Eligible patients were 55 to 74 years old and had a history of smoking for at least 30 pack years. The median duration of follow-up was 6.5 years, and the results were quite interesting. Overall, at least one positive screening result occurred in 39.1% of the CT group and 16% of the chest x-ray group. 96.4% of the CT scan patients and 94.5% of the chest x-ray patients had at least one false positive result. A total of 1,068 lung cancers were detected in the CT group and 941 in the chest x-ray group for a significant rate ratio of 1.13, favoring CT scans. A total of 356 deaths from lung cancer occurred in the CT group and 443 deaths in the chest x-ray group, representing a relative reduction in lung cancer death rate of 20%, favoring the CT group. The number needed to screen with one low-dose CT scan to prevent one death from lung cancer was 320. In a commentary by Dr. Harak Dedia and Dr. John Parker from the Pulmonary and Critical Care Units at West Virginia University of Health Science Center in Morgantown, West Virginia, these doctors believe we have entered a new era for lung cancer detection. The results of this large trial were truly positive, and the 20% reduction in lung cancer death was impressive. The problem here, of course, will be that this has just served to open the discussion of whether or not this is cost-effective. With false positive rates over 90% on each research arm, many patients will be worked up and not have lung cancer, resulting in significant cost and potential morbidity. Nevertheless, Drs. Dedia and Parker have instituted this same screening program at the West Virginia University Health Sciences Center. Next, an unusual presentation of metastatic melanoma by Dr. Mohammed Khan and colleagues from the University of Florida College of Medicine and the Baptist Cancer Research Center in Jacksonville, Florida. There are only a few tumors which metastasize to the heart, but melanoma is a striking exception. This case report describes a young man with metastatic melanoma with metastases in all four chambers of his heart, skin, testicle, and iris of the eyes. Next are a series of meeting highlights, beginning with the ASCO Breast Cancer Symposium held in San Francisco in September 2011. Taxane-induced neuropathy gives no clue to breast cancer outcome was the theme of the presentation from the ECOG trial E1199 of 4,554 women, of whom 13 to 22% developed peripheral neuropathy. However, contrary to some earlier reports, the development of peripheral neuropathy did not predict response to taxane-containing chemotherapy in early breast cancer. Next was a trial from the MD Anderson in Houston, Texas, concluding that chemotherapy timely does not affect breast cancer outcome. With a median follow-up of 7 to 8 years, 3,000 patients in a trial of neoadjuvant versus adjuvant chemotherapy in women with early breast cancer did not show a difference in outcome. Next, a report of the etinostat, a novel oral histone deacetylase inhibitor, was given once weekly, and in a phase 2 trial gave impressive results in 131 women with ER-positive advanced breast cancer who were progressing on aromatase inhibitor therapy. Results showed they compared with exemestane plus placebo or exemestane plus etinostat, which reduced the risk of progression-free survival events by 27% and the risk of death by 44% and was quite well tolerated. In a retrospective cohort study of 269 women with metastatic breast cancer whose bone metastases were hotter on PET CT, patients had a poorer survival when compared with those who are not as hot on SUV. This was the report by Dr. Kamal Javeri, who led this study at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute in New York. Finally, from this meeting, a new gene-based biomarker was presented that may help to estimate prognosis in whom we can make decisions about extended endocrine therapy in women with estrogen receptor positive early breast cancer. This new biomarker, called the Breast Cancer Index, was studied in 249 women with ER-positive early breast cancer in the MA17 trial. The study results revealed that with each 5-year unit increase in this breast cancer index, a woman's odds of late recurrence nearly tripled. The report was given by Dr. Dennis Troji, Director of Breast Pathology at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. Next, a few highlights from the 2011 European Multidisciplinary Cancer Congress held in Stockholm, Sweden, in September 2011. The investigational agent radium-223 chloride cut the risk of dying during follow-up by 30% among minimally symptomatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer men with bone metastases and was less toxic than was placebo, of course, in a phase 3 randomized trial. This was the report from the ALIMTA trial. There was a maximum follow-up of 3 years and a median overall follow-up of 11.1 months versus 14 months, favoring the patients receiving the radium-223 chloride. In contrast, there was a celecoxib plus hormone therapy in metastatic prostate cancer that revealed no benefit in terms of failure-free survival when compared with hormone therapy only. This was the result of the STAMPEDE trial presented by Dr. Noel Clark. Vorinostat failed as a second-line therapy for mesothelioma in a presentation by Dr. Lee Krogh for the Phase 3 VANTAGE-014 trial. All patients had received and progressed on ALIMTA cisplatin-based therapy before going on to this randomized Phase 3 second-line trial of vorinostat versus best supportive care. On the brighter side was a report of the novel antibody-guided trastuzumab called TDM1 that improved progression-free survival by 5 months in HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer patients, according to Dr. Sarah Hurwitz. In this Phase 3 trial, patients received either the TDM1 or trastuzumab and a dose of Taxol, resulting in median progression-free survival of 14 months versus 9 months in favor of the TDM1 arm. This was a Phase 2 trial. Dr. Fabrice Barlesi presented the results of the EVAPERI trial in lung cancer. In this Phase 3 first-line cisplatin-pemetrexed-bevacizumab study, followed by continued maintenance with both pemetrexed and bevacizumab, or just bevacizumab alone. Overall, survival with the bevacizumab-only arm was 15.7 months and has not yet been reached in the combination arm. Very interesting. Finally, our Washington update reveals, correction reviews, the recent FDA question, when are biosimilars similar enough? Well, the answer has not yet been decided. The FDA intends to propose and answer this question by the end of 2011, almost 2 years after the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 called for the making of available, cheaper versions of therapeutic biologics, or so-called biosimilars. The stumbling point has been how to define when a drug or therapeutic is similar enough. Clearly, a production process will have to be reviewed and verified, but then some form of clinical trial would be necessary. The question remaining to answer is how big a trial and in what context should this prove enough biosimilarity? The NCCN expects to weigh in on this issue before the end of this year for their definition, so we will follow both white papers with interest when they come out. And that concludes this month's issue of the Community Oncology Journal podcast for the month of October 2011. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please visit us at our website, communityoncology.net, and thanks for listening.